Well, Nick, a very nice way to bounce back after yesterday's series opener. A sellout crowd of over 41,000 people down here at the Rogers Center today, and they all got to see a 7-1 Blue Jays win, funnily enough, after a 7-1 Blue Jays loss yesterday to even the series at one game apiece. Blue Jays are now 41-35 on the season. The roof rolled back mid-game. It was open pretty much for the most of it. So I think it was a pretty good day to be at the ballpark. And at least for one day, all is right in Blue Jays land.
Sort of a textbook win for the Blue Jays, right? You get one of your reliable veteran starters giving you a ton of innings. You get a Bo home run. You get a Vladdy home run. The rest of the more complimentary hitters are doing the job for you. You know, eight guys in this lineup got a hit. Four of them got multiple hits. It wasn't really about one individual performer other than, you know, Barrios deserves his due.
For sure.
7.2 innings, yeah. No earned runs against, held the lineup to two hits. It was not the most dangerous and scary lineup he could possibly face. But doing that against anyone is really impressive. Like, since the beginning of 2021, he started 144 games. This is just the fifth one that went longer than seven innings. We talked before the game about the importance of length. This bullpen, you know, pitched a lot in Friday's game. There weren't that many players who were particularly fresh. Barrios took the ball. He got them extremely deep into this game. I think he probably could have finished the eighth inning, to be honest. It wasn't that close a game where they had to worry too much. You could argue that John Schneider was maybe a bit overcautious there. You know, there was a time when it looked like he had a really good chance to go all nine. It was a little bit less efficient at the very end there. But generally speaking, there was soft contact. There was quick at-bats. His pitches weren't always getting whiffs, but they were moving well. And, yeah, it was a heck of a day at the office for him, and that set the table for everyone else to come through and contribute up and down the lineup.
That's Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali, of course, listening to Jays Talk. We're live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. You guys know the drill. The People's Text Line is always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. Before we get into the game, Barrios, Bo hitting a home run, Vladdy hitting a home run, David Schneider had three RBI today. We do have some stuff to give away, Nick. I mean, there was the Gausman shirt giveaway from earlier in the week. We'll see what else is lingering in the endless cabinet of Tom Young. But all you have to do to win a prize is simply text us, this is how it works, the answer to a trivia question, 590-590, name and location. If you get the answer correct, you will be entered into a draw to win this prize. I will throw out the question after the break, so stick around, and then we will have that question for you, and we'll probably give it until the game starts tomorrow, so anyone who listens to the podcast can at least get a chance to also participate with all of our radio listeners. But we will ask a question. It will be Davis Schneider related. That's my little tease, okay? Because how often does he have three RBI, right? Not often, let's face it, these days. So well, Davis Schneider related question will come your way for your chance to win a prize. And again, all you have to do is text me the answer to the question at 590-590, name and location. But as you said, Nick, it was a very well-rounded game. You started with Barrios. I think that's a great place to continue going because, like you said, 7 2/3, two hits, that's all the White Sox got all day today. One run, it was not earned, as it was the run came that was scored came on the throw that Vladdy was charged on an error for. I think it was a good decision. The throw just took Kirk a little bit up the third baseline. And I'll give credit to Miguel Vargas. I mean, he kind of tiptoed around that tag attempt, and he dove back to touch home plate before Kirk could get to him. So some acrobatics by Vargas there, along with a not-so-great throw from Vladdy. But that was the only run charged to Barrios today, and it was not earned. Three walks, five Ks for him, 98 pitches, 58 strikes. I mean, the slurve, very early in the game, the slurve and the sinker looked like they were working. I mean, they worked all day, right? The sinker in particular, two-seamer sinker, however you want to class it with Barrios in particular, moving all afternoon, right? I mean, it was starting off the plate, then it would move back just enough to clip the zone to get some of these guys. He didn't get a lot of strikeouts, and he did get those two at the very end to bump his total up to five, but he just kept White Sox batters today off balance enough that ultimately they just could not seem to get anything going pretty much at any point today, which is really nice to see.
Yeah, the velocity was a bit down, but the movement was really there. And when you think of the term a sinker, you often imagine a pitch really diving down into the zone, causing guys to hit it into the turf. That's sort of the idea. But with Berríos, it's a lot more about that arm side movement horizontally side to side. And that's part of what makes him a really effective pitcher, is that he's got that sinker going to the arm side, and then he has the slurve going to the glove side. And I was really impressed with that sinker, the way, as you mentioned, it was coming in and clipping the zone against left-handers. It was kind of trailing in against right-handers. And either way, whoever was up against it, they were really struggling to pick up the movement, react accordingly. And it wasn't ground ball after ground ball. He did get a couple double plays behind him, which was really helpful. But that pitch in particular was humming. And again, you can always say, you know what, it was the White Sox, another lineup might have had more success. Sure. But you can only control who you're up against. You can't control who you're up against. You just have to face who comes up to plate against you. And there were some guys, like Benintendi had a lot of success against him in the past, sure, for example. There were some guys who had the ability to threaten him, and he made this group look pretty harmless all day long.
Yeah, I was impressed with Berríos today. I think it was important for him to get a bounce back, because prior, we talked about this in the pregame show, but prior to his outing against the Phillies, which was, what, 4 2/3, 6 earned runs, prior to that game, he had 3 combined starts where it was, what, 18 2/3, I think he had allowed 10 hits combined over those 18 2/3, 1 earned run in those 3 games. It looked pretty good, 15 strikeouts in those 3 games. A lot of it looked like it was humming for Berríos, and then he kind of ran into a team like the Phillies, and again, the Phillies are a very good ball club. They had kind of had an uneven season, let's call it, themselves, and they've dealt with injuries certainly also. But in Philly, they took it to Berríos, and he just, you know, it's not, I'm sure there was some luck involved, but it just, he wasn't executing as we usually expect him to. And I think even with that Philly start, what surprised me the most was simply that Berríos, even when he pitches just in, like, all right, essentially, he has been able to give you length, and he didn't really give the Blue Jays length. And 4 2/3 against the Phillies is not what you've come to expect. 7 2/3, my goodness. I mean, even with the off day on Monday, you know this team. And John Schneider has said this, and I'm sure he's going to say it again at some point, if not today, maybe tomorrow. But because they have the off day and they just had one a couple days ago, it probably does give them a little bit more options, a few more options when it comes to taking the ball out of the starter's hand and getting it into the hands of whoever they want to give to close down games. And today ended up being Chad Green, because not only did Berríos give them length, the White Sox couldn't get a lot going, and to the bats' credit, they managed to actually come through and pick Berríos, not even pick him up, because that makes it sound like he had a poor game, but support him at the very least a little bit more when it comes to run support. So, yeah, pretty much all things went well today, and you didn't have to dip into your high velo guys, high leverage guys outside of Weyrod, who just hadn't pitched in a couple days.
Absolutely. And with Berríos, sometimes it feels like it's more solid than spectacular. Like, it's a little bit more workmanlike than it is amazing. And that's partly because the strikeout totals aren't always that impressive. It's partly because he can give up quite a few home runs at times. But if you look up now at the end of this outing, his ERA is 3.51, which would be a career best if he finished. And none of us have been sitting around thinking, this is the best Jose Berríos I've ever seen. But he just, you know, he takes the ball every time he's given it, and he provides the length, and he keeps runs off the board. And it's not always the prettiest, and some of the underlying numbers would tell you that, you know, he's in danger of giving up more. But generally speaking, he's been fantastic with runners in scoring position, with guys on base, in those high-leverage spots. Is that a skill you can replicate over a vast amount of time? It's hard to say. But also, this is kind of what he's been doing for a couple of years now. There's a lot of numbers that would tell you, like, oh, Berríos, his expected ERA is often significantly higher than his normal ERA.
Right.
You know, his fielding independent numbers are not some of the best in the league. But then you look up, and at the end of the year, here's an ERA that's notably below 4. Here's a bunch of innings and no missed starts. In a way, I think he's one of the more underappreciated pitchers in the game because, again, it's not Paul Skenes out there. You're not marveling at every single pitch he throws. But this, what we saw today is kind of an example of the quiet effectiveness that he brings. And then you mentioned how you're able to maneuver the bullpen as a result of that, right? Like, Rodriguez comes out and he only pitches a single out. Okay, well, that gives you flexibility to bring him back on Sunday. and potentially use him ahead of that off day. Basically, you bring in Chad Green and say, okay, well, now he's pitched two in a row. He's not available Sunday. We'll kind of burn that Green inning in a spot where it's not particularly important. You sort of assume anyone can get you out of a 7-1 spot. I thought that that was an interesting managerial move to say, you know what, maybe there will be a Y-Rod moment on Sunday. It might be a closer game. Let's make sure we have that guy available, and we'll kind of throw Chad Green in here. We'll shut him down probably through that off day. And so it is odd to see a guy, especially a guy who brings length out of the bullpen, give you a single out. But it was smart to think ahead, I believe.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. We'll go to the text line very shortly. But before we do, let's go to the phones. And to lead us off today, our leadoff batter on the phones is Jen in Toronto. Jen, welcome to Jays Talk. What's up?
I'm glad to hear the analyst talk about fielding, independent pitching, Berríos, and that.
Sure.
But when I called the producer, I'd mentioned we don't have a shutdown pitching staff to compete in the playoffs.
What's your point today, Jen? Just that.
Well,
like,
my point is that Berríos did well.
Right.
But his FIP, I follow that.
Uh-huh.
And feel and so on. We don't have Tariq Skubal, anyone like that. And Kevin Barker on his last show was talking about who would you start in the playoffs. So I'm asking, who would you start?
That's a good question. Okay, I got you now, Jen. I appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us, as usual. I don't know what I just completely misheard Jen when she said FIP, but yes, FIP. Independent pitching. Berríos certainly having a good game. Number one starter, though. I don't want to be too prisoner of the moment, Nick, and say Berríos, but I mean, I do feel like Berríos has been more consistent in the last month, let's say, if you're only narrowing it to that, than Kevin Gausman. I'd have to go back and look specifically at Bassett starts to see how that stacks up as well, although I feel like for me personally, I'd rather roll the dice on Berríos than Bassett, probably, maybe due to, you know, like you said, velo wasn't always there 100% of the time. But again, I know by saying Berríos after we just talked about how great he was in 7 2/3, that would sound like a little bit of being prisoner of the moment. But I think at least right this second, I feel more comfortable with Berríos than Gausman. But I'd have to go look specifically at what Bassett's been doing lately.
Yeah, Bassett has not been fantastic lately. He might be my pick. Can you think of sort of body of work this season? Who's been the Jays' best starter? It has felt like Bassett a lot of the time. As you mentioned, obviously, Berríos coming off this fantastic outing, and he does have, you know, that lengthy track record of being good. I think when it comes to the playoffs, part of the difficulty the Jays have encountered, and you know, in their brief playoff cameos recently, it's more been the offense shutting off that's been an issue. But they have this rotation that has veteran, durable guys who are potentially more good than great. And Gausman has a great turn in him, and we saw it in
for
May,
sure.
For instance.
Yeah, 1,000%.
But when you think about the other competitors in the playoffs, they generally have the pitcher who's more likely to give you that, you know, the 6-inning, 10-strikeout, 1-walk, no-earned-run type of outing. Like, the Jays' pitchers are not as much on that level. So the guys are similar enough that, Sho, I do think you have to look at who has been performing well lately. And you also have to look at what is the matchup. There might be certain teams where they feel like, okay, this is a team that is more likely to thrive against a Bassett or a Berríos or a Gausman, depending on who it might be. Like, those guys are close enough
right.
that you think, like, some teams, they just say, okay, this is our ace. Go and try and hit this guy.
Yeah.
Good luck. The Jays are not in that position. So I think the Jays will have to ponder, okay, what is the matchup? Who is pitching well? Who is the guy? Again, so gun to my head at this moment, maybe I would say Bassett. But realistically, we're going to have to get there and see where these guys are and think about who an opponent might be.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's always going to be a huge part of it, because if you're the Detroit Tigers, I mean, I don't care how they're going to make the playoffs this year. They're going to win their division. And I don't care how that lines up. You're going to finagle it in a way that no matter who the opponent is, Tarek Skubal starting game one of the playoffs, no matter who it is, for the Detroit Tigers. That's happening. I'm telling you, you can put that in pen right now, unless he gets injured or something. That's happening for the Tigers this year. You can probably do that. Would the Phillies get to the playoffs if Nola is unavailable? And this would probably be the case even if he wasn't unavailable. But Zach Wheeler's probably starting game one for the Phillies, and they're probably going to try and finagle it so that Ranger Suarez starts game two, right? So you kind of have that slam dunk answer for a lot of the teams that have those, as Jen says, aces. And I mean, Barker, to her point, has talked about this, how, and you and I talked about this in the pregame show, the idea that the Blue Jays do kind of like quote-unquote only have a number of number two starters or number three starters. And I mean, look, Berríos, I think, over the course of his career, I do think, and you brought up if he finishes where he's at right now in an ERA, this would be a career best. So I do believe that if ultimately he finishes here, this is the best inning the year of his career, he probably gets that nod for me. But, you know, career-wise, Berríos has probably been cast as a 2-3 starter, and I think that's, like, right. That sounds about right to me. Does mean you need more on the starting rotation side of things when it comes to like what your decision-making process will be at the deadline this year or going forward. I know I'm not sure how much you've looked at the free agent market for this coming off season, but it's apart from essentially Bo and I would say, I guess, Kyle Tucker, the next biggest names on the free agent board are largely pitchers, right? Like it's like Dylan Cease and guys like that, right? And it's kind of goes from Cease all the way down, number one aces, all the way down to number five guys in rotation. So maybe that's a problem if it is not resolved adequately, at least for a longer term stint at the deadline this year. I wonder if that's something that can have like money thrown at it essentially as a solution in the offseason. The only problem with trying to get an ace is that, to you guys' points, Jen's point, your point, is that they're so few and far in between that sometimes, you know, money is not the end factor all the time. I feel like 99% of the time it's the biggest factor, but it's not the only factor, I should say.
And those guys always have a vast market because you can always upgrade at starting pitcher. You might have someone locked in at shortstop, at second base, at first base, at catcher, and so it doesn't make sense for you to pursue a top-of-the-market player there. Like, the Blue Jays are not going to be in the catcher market for the foreseeable future.
Right,
Alejandro
right.
Kirk is locked in there, but you can always fit an awesome starter. So every team that thinks they're competitive, and before the game we talked about how this expanded playoff has basically everyone feeling like they're competitive, all of those teams think, man, if we added Dylan Cease, our rotation would be better because nobody's got five starters better than Dylan Cease. It's difficult to play in those markets. Now the Blue Jays have had success there, right? They signed Kevin Gausman. They believed in what he did with San Francisco, and they gave him an aggressive contract as opposed to giving a similar contract to Robbie Ray. That worked out really well for the team. They said Chris Bassitt may be a little bit long in the tooth, but we think his style of pitching is going to hold up, and they got him as well. I mean, Jose Berríos was a trade. They offered him an extension that was lengthier than what a lot of starting pitchers get. They believed in those guys. They were aggressive in those pursuits. So you can certainly build a rotation that way, but it is a difficult thing to do. And the Blue Jays have been left with, kind of three, number three-ish, number two-ish starters. And that probably works, to be honest, better in the regular season than the playoffs. Like, what have we been talking about with Berríos? This guy makes every start. This guy's super consistent. Those are awesome qualities to have over a six-month grind of a season. But in game one of the playoffs, doesn't matter that you've been taking the ball every fifth day for 6 months. It matters what can you do on this individual night against what is presumably a really good lineup. And that's where, those guys don't quite stack up compared to the biggest stars in the league on the pitching side.
Dustin in Saskatoon on the text line, 590-590, name and location, saying, can't say enough good things about Berríos today. He knew coming in today he needed at least six innings. Doesn't matter the competition. He took the pressure and took over the game. You can really tell he pitched to contact, trusted the defense. People might look at the box score and say, well, only 5Ks. That was by design. Talk about an unselfish game where the starter picked up the team and did his thing. This one is from Justin in Parry Sound. Very well-rounded game. Felt like an entire team effort. Berríos is a stud. Feeling good after this win, even though it's against the White Sox. And, you know, I think that's a valid point to observe, right, that it is the White Sox. And I mean, we said this after they swept the A's in four games, which is still difficult to do. But, you know, I think you can both enjoy results like today, and also acknowledge that the Jays need to keep it up against teams that are a little bit better and that are not at the bottom of the American League. Having said that, I do think, and you don't let me know if I'm being crazy when I say this, Nick, but I do think I've seen enough over the course of the last, I'm not even going to say the whole season, but over the course of the last, what, like, month maybe? Like, in the, you know, dating back to when they had won five straight series, I think leading into that Philly series, I think I've seen enough to think a lot of what you're getting from the offense is sustainable. And I'm not just talking, and we can get into the offense in more micro aspects with Vladdy and Bo, both of whom went yard today. But, you know, guys like Ernie Clement and Nathan Lucas, who was batting number two today, he had a pretty good game. You know, other guys, I mean, Barger is not a part of it today because he was scratched, but the bottom of the order, generally speaking, has come through. It just, I think a lot of what you're seeing offensively certainly is sustainable to make you feel like when guys start to come back, when they do solve the starting rotation conundrum with two of these five spots in the order, you feel like you can continue to get these kinds of results, even though, yes, today was a 7-1 win against one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball.
You simply are not going to win 7-1 all the time. You're not going to face the White Sox all the time, but there is no such thing as an automatic win. We saw that on Friday, and even against, you know, when they're using a bullpen day, generally speaking, that's going to be a difficult one to win, even against a lesser opponent, and we saw how that played out. So, yeah, just because something is against the White Sox, it doesn't mean it doesn't count. And realistically, the position players on this team have become the strength of the team. Going into the season, a lot of people said, oh, at least the rotation is something you can count on, but sort of who knows with this group of position players. And when you think about what they're bringing offensively, as you mentioned, it's kind of since late May or so. That Athletics series seemed like a bit of a turning point for the group as a whole. And some of that is the, you know, the emergence of Addison Barger. We'll see how his health nets out. I'm sure we're going to hear more about that in the days to come. Whether it is, you know, Nathan Lucas has been pretty good even at times when the rest of the offense wasn't. Whether it's Kirk and Springer rebounding after, you know, two off years for both of them, to be honest. This is a longer lineup than we might have thought it was. And I don't think Vladdy or Bo, to an extent, have necessarily met expectations of this one. Bo's getting pretty close that his power has been pushed.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think we've necessarily seen the best of those two players, the kind of star contributors that you're hoping your lineup will be built around. But it's just a little bit of a deeper group than we imagined. And it hasn't really been, you know, it hasn't been Alan Roden or some of the, you know, Class A or the younger guys of that group. Barger's really the only one who has broken through. But you've got a steady-ish group of veteran guys, or even the Ernie Clements of the world who've been around a little bit. And it's not a ton of star performances, but kind of like we saw today in this game, it's a bunch of guys who can contribute at a relatively high level. And I don't think this offense is ever going to be the most dangerous one in baseball. But when you combine it with the defensive contributions, and
for sure,
people don't really love the way the Blue Jays have tilted toward defense because they feel like it's made them less fun and there's been less home runs. And I get all that. And so defense has got a bit of a bad name in this market over the last couple of years, but it's important and it's valuable. So when you add a competent, relatively deep offense with elite level defense, what you've got is one of the better position-playing groups in the major leagues, even if it's not full of massive household name stars who are hitting, you know, 20-plus bombs less than halfway through the season.
It's pretty remarkable to me, and we can take a break after this. We'll check out the Bet365 standings update, take more of your calls, more of your texts, and I'll throw out that trivia question as well in a couple minutes. But it's remarkable to me, Nick, that you can look at this season. It's June 21st. The Blue Jays just won their 41st game of the season. You brought this up to me on the pregame show, but they didn't even win their 40th game of the season until after Canada Day last year. So we are approximately 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks ahead of schedule if you want to compare this year to last year, and last year was a bad year. So I get not wanting to make that comparison. But I only bring it up because the offseason's biggest additions were Anthony Santander, there were Max Scherzer, who we might see next week, it certainly feels like, against the Guardians in Cleveland, and Andrés Giménez, who is obviously back from the IL. And he's been fine, I guess, right, Giménez? But my only point is that after a really hot start, we haven't seen that much from Giménez. We've seen pretty much nothing from either Santander or Scherzer. So it's for that reason, it's remarkable to me that you are effectively 2.5 weeks ahead of schedule, quote-unquote, when your three biggest offseason acquisitions have all given you little to nothing, essentially. So you are effectively getting way more out of almost the exact same group of players as you got last year. Like, we're talking about Springer. We're talking about Kirk. We're talking about Bo and Vladdy. And now Bo, obviously, you could count him as a quote-unquote addition because he was injured for most of the year last year. But certainly he's a part of this conversation. I mean, Ernie Clement was on the team last year. Addison Barger's played 70 games, 69 or 70 games for the Blue Jays last year. You're getting far better contributions from him. So, but you are getting, and again, despite the opponent today, you are getting on the whole of the season more from the same guys who you didn't get as much from in 2024, which I think is very impressive. And I think that's why it feels like what you're seeing results-wise in terms of they're never out of a game, comebacks have happened often this season, it feels like it's more sustainable than in years past.
Yeah, absolutely. And to some extent, this front office kind of believed in those guys in the past, particularly with Kirk and Springer, and got burned. And so people didn't like the team's continued belief in some of these guys, and yet here they are producing at a high level. One name that you didn't mention there I think is worth throwing into the mix is Jeff Hoffman, right?
Sure.
That's a huge investment into the bullpen. And as much as his stuff has looked nasty and we're all fairly confident he's going to be a good contributor for the rest of the season, he's also carrying a 5.34 ERA and has had some pretty notable blowups. Like, you would have expected, in terms of bottom line results, you would have expected significantly more from him as well. Even the other bullpen additions, Nick Sandlin has been mainly injured for most of the season. Yimi Garcia has, you know, he's been solid, but he's been injured for a significant part of the season as well. So even the less heralded additions haven't given you much. And that's something I think is a little bit of a glass half full component for the Blue Jays going forward, where here's a bunch of guys we thought would be the talent infusion to get us back into contention. We haven't gotten much of them. I think you'll get significantly more in the weeks to come.
I always forget to add Yimi Garcia as an addition. Isn't that kind of funny? I know. I think it's because, like, he played for the team last year, was traded. I think he, like, ended his year on the IL, I want to say, with the Mariners. He certainly, I don't think, had a big contribution to them down the stretch. And then he came back to Toronto, which we often say that about players. Like, oh, yeah, they'll leave in free agency, and then you could re-sign them. It actually doesn't happen that often that players leave and come back in free agency that same year. But it actually did with Jimmy, so you should count him. But you're right. He's been injured for a good chunk of time now. It does sound like he is a little closer to making his return, but you're right. He should be counted. Hoffman should be counted, certainly. Sandlin, who came over in the Jimenez trade as well, should also be counted. But, yeah, I think you're getting some pretty good contributions from guys that were already here, which I got to think bodes well going forward. That's Nick Ashbourn. I'm Sho Ali, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. You can text us. You can call us. We're going to step aside, take a quick break, come back, look at the Bet365 standings update, hear from the skipper, and after the commercial, we will throw out that Davis Schneider trivia question for you as well for a little giveaway prize. So, still lots to come. We're here for another 15, 20 minutes or so. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The White Sox still have the infield in, so it's Davis Schneider's job to lift something to the outfield.
And he did just that, Chris, on cue, a line drive, base hit into left field. The Blue Jays cash in another one. RBI single for Davis Schneider.
That's got to feel good for Davis Schneider. He's been struggling just a little bit. Rips that off-speed pitch. A little hanger from Savali into left field for an RBI and a 3-0 Blue Jays lead.
That is Eric Smith and Chris LaRue with the call today as Davis Schneider, one of his three RBI today, the most in a single game this season. Welcome back to Blue Jays Talk. Sho Ali, Nick Ashbourn here with you. Yeah, for another 20 minutes or so. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. That's the way to reach us on the phones. 590-590, name and location. That's the way to reach us on the text line. Before I throw out that Davis Schneider-themed trivia question, let's get to the Bet365 standings update. At Bet365, you can bet on popular markets like hits, home runs, and total bases. Download the app and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 19+, play responsibly. Ontario only. All right, Nick. So if we take a look around the American League East, the Yankees and Rays both won today. So definitely good that the Jays were able to take advantage of a matchup against the White Sox to somewhat keep pace with these guys. The Orioles are a ways back, but I suppose it is always good when two other teams in the American League East play each other. But the Yankees won 9-0 over the Orioles. in a game where Clark Schmidt had seven hitless innings. He carried a no-hitter until the end of his game. He had thrown 103 pitches in that game, something he had never done in his career. So I think they, like, wisely had to take him out. I'm sure on WFAN they are not particularly happy that he did not get a chance to complete the no-hitter, but I kind of understand it. Anthony Volpe had one of four home runs. He had a three-hit day for the Yankees. So 9-0, they win over the Orioles. The Rays beat the Tigers, pretty surprising, 8-3. So a real walloping for the AL-leading Tigers. Rays pick up a win there. And this game is not over. It looks like it's going to the bottom of the eighth inning right now. But the Giants are playing the Red Sox. The Giants are up 3-0 right now. And hitting his first home run as a San Francisco Giant, Rafael Devers. That's just how baseball works, I suppose, eh, Nick?
Absolutely. And that's going to be a fun series, I think, to keep an eye on over the weekend. I don't know to what extent revenge is the right word to use here, but right, I'm sure right. that Rafael Devers is pleased to be doing well against his former employer that he had a contentious relationship with.
So the Yankees, with their win, they are 44-32. The Rays, with their win, they are 43-34. The Blue Jays, with the win today here at the Rogers Center, they are 41-35. The Red Sox, no result in that one yet. They're 40-37, but barring a comeback, they will be 40-38. And the Baltimore Orioles, they lost to the Yankees. They are 33-43. So that's a quick check of our Bet365 standings update. All right, I teased it like a million times. Let's do the trivia question here, Nick. Davis Schneider had three RBI today. An RBI single, which you just heard, a two RBI double in the eighth. The most ribbies he has had in a single game this year as a Blue Jay. Last year, 2024, he had one game in which he had three RBI. To make it simple, all you have to do is name that team. Text me the name of that team, okay, to 590-590, name and location. You will be entered into a draw for the chance to win a prize. It'll be one of the giveaways that we got back here, Gosman shirt. Tom just told me there's one of the Pride Night cross-body bags, like the fanny pack things that they were giving out. So there's one of those back there. And I'm sure we can finagle some other prizes from the creative department as well. So text us the answer to that question. Again, one game last year, 2024, in which Davis Schneider had three RBI like he did today. All you have to do is text me the name of that team. 590-590, name and location. It's kind of a funny answer, I think.
As far as trivia questions go, I think this is a good one because it's opening it up to people who just want to guess. All you need to do is send in the name of an MLB team, yeah. And you're in with a shot, realistically. Sometimes you get obscure stats in baseball. If you don't know the answer, you got absolutely no chance. This time, just text in the name of a baseball team, and you have a shot.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, you can text in the city's name. You can text in the actually, you know what? No, you know what? Saying too much more will spoil it here, actually. I almost ruined it. Now that I almost completed that thought. Anyways, you can text us the name of that team to 590-590, name and location. Let's talk about Davis Schneider, though. Because, again, three ribbies today for him. And Davis Schneider, I mean, we got a call on Blue Jays Talk with Blair and Barker yesterday saying, like, what do you do with Davis Schneider? Like, this guy's not hitting. He's not contributing in meaningful ways. And, again, I'm not saying that you can look at today's game and say, all right, he had three ribbies against the White Sox. Like, he's slot him into the fifth spot every day, right? I'm not saying you can necessarily do that. But I am curious, Nick, when you see that from Schneider, what you feel the outlook is on, I don't want to say his whole career, but certainly how he could be used going forward, because sooner rather than later, we are going to get back guys like Varsho and Santander. There are probably other candidates to be sent down from the lineup, but I am curious what your take on Schneider is, because, you know, my take is well documented that he needed to go down, and being brought back up was also a matter of necessity, but I'm curious where you fall on all things Schneider.
Because he had such a poor season in 2024, and really we're talking about a poor second half of the season, because he got off to a pretty good start through April and May, he hasn't really earned much rope at this point. Like, he kind of has to perform if he wants to be on the big league club. Now, the thing that he has going for him is that he sort of fits the team's roster needs. Like, they do not have a lot of guys capable of playing on the infield. Beyond, you know, Barger, Vladdy, Jimenez, and Clement, like, he's arguably the next best guy up to play second base. He's also right-handed when they have a fair amount of guys who are left-handed or switch hitters, which makes him an interesting sort of platoon option in the corner outfield. Those things are working in his favor just based on who the other guys on the roster are. So if he's someone that they can throw in against you know, a significant percentage of left-handed starters come off the bench as a power threat if he shows some of that that he used to have a couple years ago at a certain point. Like, there is a useful role for him on this team. It's not a starring role by any means. It's not an everyday role. It is kind of a niche role that he can play. But if he can show the ability to play that relatively well, then there can be a spot for him, even if as some guys come back. And so the bar for him isn't that high, I don't think. I think he has to show a little bit of pop. He's got to show that his patience can result in walks, not just strikeouts, because he gets really deep into counts.
Right.
And that's been a double-edged sword for him in his career. He's struck out a lot. He's walked a lot. This season, in, you know, in a limited sample, he has a very high walk rate, and that has helped him. He's on base right now. He's 358. That's a really good number. He just hasn't done any hitting outside of that, and so as a result, the overall stats aren't that good. But for a guy who struggled for most of last season, didn't hit particularly well in the minors this season, to be honest. He, in most cases, I think he would be set up to, be an easy guy to send down at a given moment. But he just has a little bit more of a roster fit than some of these other guys. And I could see him sticking around if he picks it up just a little bit.
What did you make of Nathan Lucas today? Hitting in the two-hole, right? I think it was a very quick out the first time up, but then an RBI single, another single the next two times up. I mean, we were talking about how the Blue Jays seem to want to keep that lefty bat in between Bo and Vladdy in that two-hole. And how much do you mess with that if it can't be Addison Barger, who, again, was scratched before the game today with the hip discomfort? But Lucas hadn't played a ton since he had returned from the IL. I mean, simply also just because there just hasn't been that many games that have taken place since his return. But definitely a positive for him. I mean, I think I've told you this before. I'm a Nathan Lucas truther, so I do appreciate that he has backed up my belief in him. But I wonder, I mean, again, if there was a lefty on the mound, I wonder how much that'll probably change some things, I would imagine. But whenever you can throw him up there, and again, I think if Barger is healthy, he is the guy you're going to put up there as long as he continues to hit. But just, I have been impressed with what Lucas has done in, again, like a somewhat small sample size for a guy who has not gotten over the course of his career a ton of major league run. But what did you think? I mean, would you keep that? Would you try and mess with that experiment a little bit if Barger continues to be out for any length of time?
If it's a couple of days, I could see it for sure. If this is a little bit of discomfort for Addison and realistically he's not going to go on the IL and he's going to be fine, then yeah, sure, throw Lucas out there. If it's a right-handed pitcher, that's a huge difference. He hasn't proven he can really hit lefties at the big league level, which, you know, he hasn't been given that opportunity, to be fair, but in the small opportunities he's had, they haven't gone particularly well. So against a right-handed starter in a pinch for a few days, I could see it over a longer period of time. You know, I think he's more of a average MLB hitter, and, like, that doesn't sound sexy, and it sounds like it's maybe a bit disrespectful, but I don't really see it that way. The fact that he's gotten to that point from grinding so hard, spending so much time in AAA, progressing to this area where, despite the fact he doesn't have loud tools in really any respect when it comes to running or hitting the ball hard, like, he has done this with skill and determination and grit, and he should be commended for it. But there is also a little bit of a limitation on what he's probably going to be capable of at this level. So I think in an ideal situation, over a longer term, he's hitting something like seventh in the lineup.
Right.
And maybe Davis Schneider is going to come in whenever there's a left-hander in a significant spot or if there's a left-handed starter. And that's absolutely fine. If anything, I think that's a better-than-expected outcome. Entering the season, he seemed to be fighting a lot of the younger players, and he's come out on top against, you'd say, most of them, to be honest.
When the outfield is healthy, so again, I mean, it doesn't really feel like we're going to get to that point until after the All-Star break, largely because of Santander. I feel like Varsha will probably see before the All-Star break, maybe even the next couple weeks or so. But let's just say, for the purpose of this exercise, the outfield is healthy. You got Varsha in center, you got Santander in right, Springer is DHing. Is your left fielder more often than not one guy? And could that guy be, if everyone is healthy and you have your pick? For me, my pick would probably have Nathan Lucas in left field. But, and again, Alan Rodon, he's not 100% healthy right now. They said his knee was still inflamed. He had been an option in left field. I mean, you could just put Santander in left field, put someone else in right field. Like, there are a lot of configurations you can go with here. But I'm curious what you think of when you think of the outfield, Nick.
I think it's complicated by what you do with Addison Barger, who I think at this point needs to be out there against right-handed pitchers. Yeah. And so if you see Barger as your as right field being his position, then either, you know, you're flipping Santander to left, or maybe you're putting Springer in left and Santander in DH. But if Ernie Clement cools down, then maybe Barger is more of a third base option. And then that does open up left field potentially for that platoon solution where Lucas would be the guy getting most of that platoon against right-handed pitching. So I think that's going to play a big role in is like, what are you doing with Addison Barger? Because he's become a priority among those players,
yeah.
And rightfully so because of the way he's performed and the power that he has brought to the lineup.
Would you put Barger at third and then maybe you just make your decision on a day-to-day basis with Clement and Jimenez at second maybe? And then keep Santander at right and Springer DHing.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I think Jimenez, you know, he deserves, based on his track record, the commitment, the contract, the benefit of the doubt, to see at least basically the lion's share of right-handed pitching. Maybe you can argue against lefties it'll be a little bit different, but this is a player they really believe in as a full-time player, and I know that what he has shown Jays fans so far has not impressed them, and that's a valid way to feel, but this is sort of a longer-term project and a player who is pretty accomplished as an MLB regular. So I would be hesitant to be too dismissive of taking Jimenez out of the lineup because I think it's not necessarily that easy with him. It's someone that they're going to want to be in there pretty consistently. Clement is interesting because there is that big gap where he really destroys left-handed pitching, to be honest, and right-handed pitching is not quite so impressive. It is going to be a mix-and-match game, but Lucas could easily carve out a decent part of this if he just continues to put his head down, get on base, get the odd extra base hit, and hit right-handed pitching in the majors. And that's, although it's been a relatively small sample over last year and this year, that's really all he's shown them. All he's shown them is that he can hit, at the very least, righty pitching at a solid rate, better than they probably expected for a guy who had spent so long in his career at AAA.
We have a couple minutes left here, Nick, and we got a couple more things to get to. So I'll let you pick. I'll let you pick. What do you want to talk about before we get out of here? We can get to Bo leading off the bottom of the first with a solo home run. He was interviewed by Hazel on the field once this game was over. Essentially, the first pitch from Savale, he gets ambushed. And, you know, I've been asking the question, when are we going to see the power from Bo? And we saw it today, and we've been seeing it more and more consistently, which is terrific as far as seeing the pre 2024 version of Bo, certainly. We get to Vladdy smashing a solo home run, just muscling that thing out in the seventh inning. Also off of Savali, a slider that he just left far too much in the zone, and Vladdy smoked that thing. Or we can get to George Springer. I mean, George Springer, I think, with a pretty fun moment early in the game, and you see the strength of his base running, which I think has been pretty good this season. I mean, he gets from first to third, and then he forces that throw to third, and the ball sails into the camera well on a throw. I mean, on an accurate throw, he might have been out, but he gambled a little bit, a little aggressive. You know, I mean, tough to make a call on being that aggressive when there are no outs early in the game, but I did like the decision, especially when you're trying to make something happen after losing the first game of a three-game series. But I am curious, what do you want to go with? We have about 6 minutes left. We can go Bo, Vladdy, or Springer.
I think it's worth touching on Vladdy. I mean, generally speaking, it's worth touching on, you know, the $500
sure,
million
yeah.
dollar
we
man.
Do it every game, really.
Yeah, it's always a story with what he's doing. And there's a couple things that are interesting with Vladdy right now. One is the move to the third spot in the order, which is an interesting one because I think on a conceptual level, when you talk about what is the ideal way to build the lineup, you probably would not put your most talented hitter third because that spot in the lineup comes up with two outs and no one on just a disproportionate amount of time. Obviously, that we're mainly talking about the first inning here, but still, over the course of the season, that's a lot of at-bats in kind of a relatively non-dangerous situation, and that's not how you draw it up. On the flip side, it really does matter to players where they are. It might sound silly, but these guys are creatures of habit. There is a comfort level component that goes into this. I think we all remember Jose Bautista's time in Toronto. He spent a lot of time in the third hole. Even at that point, there was a general understanding that it was probably better to put your best guy in the two hole. They still had Bautista there because that's where he liked to be and that's where he felt most comfortable. And if you look at Vladdy's stats, he generally has performed better in the three hole. I don't know if there's something particularly magical about it, but you know, his last five games, he now has two home runs and three doubles in that time. And in a sense, he's sort of the last domino for this offense. You could argue that Santander coming back and being some version of what he was in 2024 is sort of the big thing that hasn't happened yet. But honestly, it's Vladdy being that top tier, one of the best hitters in baseball guy that we haven't seen for any extended period of time in 2025. And I'm inclined to think that we will. And I'm not saying like, this definitively is the start of it.
Right.
But there is a world where we're looking back on this. You know, maybe you and I are doing Jay's Talk at some point in July. And we're thinking, you know what? When Vladdy went to the three hole, that's when things really started to get rolling for him. And the home run he hit today, you know, jokes were made about how the home run call was very enthusiastic and it was relatively close to staying in the yard. And that might have not been ideal for the broadcast. But to me, that's a ball that he didn't truly hit on the screws. Like when Vladdy really gets a hold of it, you're talking about an exit velocity, you know, over 110. You're generally talking about a little bit of a lower trajectory on the ball. And that, to me, just sort of showed his strength. It's like, this is Vladdy's B-plus swing here, and it's ending up in the seats. And I'm curious to see if he has a run in him where the home runs start to come in bunches, because, you know, for what the expectations are with him, home runs are not the be-all and end-all, and he's very good at walking. This year he's gotten on base at a really high clip. He's good at spraying liners around. He doesn't strike out too much. There's a lot of things he does well, but he's a first baseman. He's a well-compensated star. He's the face of the team. You want to see the home runs, and at a certain point they need to come in bunches, and you know, maybe this is the beginning of that happening. It feels like it's going to happen at a certain point, and it'll be interesting to see where he ends up there, because at points early in the season he was on pace for like, you know, early teens in home runs,
right,
which is not what you want to see from a guy like Vladdy.
I do think when it comes to Bo and Vladdy, and I'm going to include Bo in this because he also hit the home run today, but, you know, I think you just generally speaking, and this is a very simple way to look at it, certainly, I admit it, but any team, doesn't really matter if it's baseball or any other sport, you need your stars to perform like the stars, right? And I think a lot of the teams do often get that, and the Blue Jays have often gotten that, and they've been, and Bo and Vladdy in particular have been hitting pretty well, just generally speaking. But you want to see them start mashing, and I think we are starting to see that, right? I mean, Bo has hit a number of home runs in a very short period of time. All of his home runs coming since the beginning of May, and Vladdy as well. So definitely a positive to see the power start to come around for the Blue Jays. Quickly on that Davis Schneider question. Again, you can text us 590-590, name and location. Davis Schneider had 3 RBI today. He only had 1 game last year, 2024, in which he had 3 RBI. If you text us the name of that team against which he had knocked in the 3 ribbies, you can be entered into a draw to win a little giveaway of some of the giveaways that have been given out here at the stadium. I'll just say this, Nick. If you texted in Toronto Blue Jays, that is the incorrect answer. It is not the Blue Jays.
That is the one
the
guess
one team
where you're literally guaranteed to be incorrect. But
yes,
like I said, anything, throw Colorado Rockies out there. Even something that seems unlikely could be true. Any MLB team is a valid guess except the Blue Jays.
That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Adley. Blue Jays baseball brought to you by the local family-owned Crownrest Control Centers in Elmsdale and Port Dufferin, Nova Scotia. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Center. Or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick Ashbourne, Eric Smith, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Derek Brandeo, I'm Sho Adley. That does it for us. We are out of here. Nick and I are back together tomorrow to put a bow on this series. Have a great Saturday night, everyone. We'll talk to you later.